My guest at this time is Larry Sabatow. He's a professor of political science at the University of Virginia, where he also directs the school's Center for Politics, and he's the man behind the highly respected Sabatow's Crystal Ball, one of the most, if not the most, accurate political predictor in recent election cycles. For the next few minutes, we'll look at the political year in review, and Larry, it's always great to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be with you.
The year of Trump. Have you ever seen a political candidate cause this much consternation in both political parties who's also doing this well?
No. I don't know whether to elaborate or not. Maybe I should just stop at no. But you know, everybody compares him to Perot or this one or that one or the other one. No, he is his own man. He is unique. And I don't think we've ever had one like him, and I'll be surprised if we ever have another one like him.
Why does he resonate so well? Because every time he does something, it seems like most pundits in the media and even casual observers at home are saying, well, that's got to do it. Most folks didn't think he'd get in. Then he talked about Mexicans in his announcement speech. And then more recently, the Muslims. He has a spat with just about every journalist who has a negative word to say about him, and his numbers only keep going up. How do you explain this, if at all?
Well, I think you explain it because in this way, you look at the Republican base, and there's a sizable portion of that base. You can dispute what it is, but it's clearly sizable that likes Trump's approach, and more than that, likes the way he approaches things. It's his positions, but it's his style. They like his toughness. And as is always the case with candidates who do well and who take off, it's the man meeting the moment, or the person meeting the moment, if you prefer. What is the moment? Well, now it's terrorism, and so people are looking for a tough-minded candidate who will defend national interest and try to, A, destroy ISIS, not contain ISIS, or stop some of the homegrown terrorism here. And they're also looking for someone to tackle some of the other problems that apparently have spiraled out of control, or at least what many people think are out of control, including immigration. And there's another hidden factor, too. Republicans took over the House and Senate. This past year was the first year Republicans were in control totally in Congress since the year 2006, and yet the Republican activists, the Republican base, felt that very little got done. They didn't think that their leaders had met the promises that they made during the campaign of 2014. That's exactly what Trump was saying. So it's anger within the base at their own leaders. It's anger within the base at immigration. It's anger within the base at terrorism, wanting a tough guy to handle it, and who steps forward. Trump is nothing if not tough.
You mentioned the Republican-led Congress. Let's go there for the next couple of minutes, Larry, because obviously 2014 was a big year, huge majority in the House, winning back the Senate, as you mentioned, and a lot of different promises about things they were at least going to confront the president on, if not actually force his hand on. They tried to pass the Keystone Pipeline. He vetoed that. They couldn't override it. And then whether it's the Iran nuclear deal or immigration or more recently the latest omnibus bill, as you mentioned, the base feels like not a lot has been done. Are there too high of expectations, or is this a Republican Congress that just promised more than it could deliver?
Well, actually, I think it's both. During a campaign, and I know this will shock you, Greg, politicians overpromise. Don't quote me, because people will be too shocked. But they do overpromise. So, you know, the Republicans who were running were trying to take control of the Senate, get a larger majority in the House. And to do that, and they accomplished both things, they told people, if you elect us, why, we're going to get rid of Obamacare. Why, we're going to take care of some of these executive orders that Obama's been issuing. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Problem is, the Constitution really doesn't permit them to do it. And the rules of the Congress don't permit them to do it. You know, it's it's true that in the Senate you really need 60 reliable votes to get anything done, which means a party, since these are politicians and you're looking for reliable votes, you probably need 70 in your own party to get 60 votes. Republicans have 54. They don't have nearly enough senators to pass anything that's controversial. So it's I can sympathize with the leaders of Congress, and yet a lot of it does come back to what they promised in 2014, and this is what happens when you overpromise.
Larry, let's shift a little bit now to the Democratic presidential process, and unlike the very crowded field where we need two debate stages for the Republicans, the Democrats only have three candidates left on stage, and for the most part, except for a couple of states where Bernie Sanders is somewhat competitive, it's largely been a cleared path for Hillary Clinton, which is not super surprising since most people expected her to run this year. But again, have you ever seen essentially a cleared field for a non-incumbent who's got the cloud hanging over her with this server and these emails that Hillary Clinton has?
Well, you really have to go back to Richard Nixon, 1960. He was the incumbent vice president, and he was essentially unopposed. There was always the shadow of Nelson Rockefeller hanging over him, threatening to run. And yet he still had some serious problems, which manifested themselves in the campaign that he ultimately lost very narrowly to John F. Kennedy. Now, Hillary Clinton, as you say, had a virtually unobstructed path. Her opponents were minor, although Bernie Sanders has turned out to be much more significant than anybody thought he would be. And I wouldn't be shocked, even in his weakened state, if he won either Iowa or New Hampshire or both. He's actually leading right now in New Hampshire, though the margin's very close. We'll see. But the question really is, how does Hillary Clinton win? Does she win cleanly? Does she put this away early? Does she stop all the questions about the emails and this scandal and what happened in the 1990s and the queries about Bill? You know, is she going to stop that? Is it possible to stop it? Or is she going to end up being weakened not only by those things, but by President Obama's approval level? Watch that almost more than anything else come fall. Because if President Obama is unpopular and has a low approval rating, I don't think he can get Hillary Clinton elected. I don't think she can get elected independently of him. Now, if he moves back up to somewhere around 50, then the prospect of a third consecutive term for the incumbent White House party, the Democrats, becomes possible again.
What about the electoral map? Does it inherently favor one side or the other going in?
Well, the electoral map in a close contest, in a really competitive contest, favors the Democrats because of the demographic changes that have been transforming the American electorate, the growth of the Hispanic vote, growth of Asian Americans, a larger turnout among African Americans, the tendency of young people to vote more Democratic. But, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same. I'm old enough, and you're a youngin', but I'm in my 60s, and I've heard over and over and over again how this party has a lock on the Electoral College. Oh, wait, no, it's that party that has a lock on the Electoral College. People put these theories out there, and then a year comes where the public wants change, and they say, well, so much for that theory, and it's out the window.
Larry, you mentioned a moment ago that Hillary Clinton's fortunes in 2016 will largely be tied to the way the public views President Obama in his final months in office. Do you see President Obama, especially with a Republican Congress, as essentially in the same lame duck position that George W. Bush was 8 years ago right now, or in some ways is he less so?
Well, he's a lame duck, that's for sure. And he's not going to get anything significant passed by Congress, that's also for sure. He'll have a hard time even getting basic appointments through because it's traditional for the other party to slow things down in a presidential election year, hoping that their party will win. Now, you never know what executive orders he's going to issue. So you have to give him that. And his goal ultimately has to be to elect the Democratic nominee, presumably Hillary Clinton. Otherwise, his legacy items, for the most part, are going to be repealed or greatly reduced. Those are the facts. That's what happens when you lose a presidential election and your successor is from the other party.
Larry, you mentioned the power of the executive order. He's obviously been not shy at all about using that tactic to get what he wants when he gets blocked by Congress. We also, of course, saw him simply declare the Iran deal not to be a treaty. Same thing with this climate treaty in Paris. And for the most part, he's gotten away with it. So in addition to the individual issues, obviously, that Obama will be remembered for, what about his handling of the executive branch? How will that play out long term, do you think?
The old rule was that a president's job, of course, is to be the executive, to execute the law, to carry out the law faithfully. But it's also become true that presidents seem to use every opportunity available to expand the powers of the presidency at the expense of the other branches. At some point, I think there'll be a rebellion. It may have to come in the courts rather than in the legislature, given the numbers. But it's probably going to come. Now, give Obama credit, give him points for expanding the power of the executive if you wish. But the founders did establish a separation of powers and a balance between and among the powers. And we have to make sure that that's preserved.
Larry, we'll call it there. But obviously a very exciting year to come. February 1st is the first time people actually cast real votes. And then it'll be a sprint from there to the conventions and finally to Election Day. So rest up now over the holidays. Merry Christmas to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
I can't wait for some real votes. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Happy new election year to you too, Greg.
Thanks, Larry. Larry Sabatow is professor of political science at the University of Virginia. He is director of UVA's Center for Politics and the man behind Sabatow's crystal ball. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.